Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Good afternoon. My name is Renee Giacchino. If you've just joined the program, you're listening to Your Turn, the program I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. All right, we're moving off the issue of executive privilege and on to the issue of Sicko, that movie that some folks are still talking about, the movie I have yet to see, although I guess it would probably be the first one that I've seen that he has done. I've kind of made it a position of mine that I wouldn't see any of the movies, even though everybody's talking about them. But here to talk with us today about the movie Sicko and how we may otherwise be able to correctly diagnose the problems with our U.S. healthcare system and resolve them is Stuart Browning. He's the director of freemarketcure.com. If you're sitting at your computer, I encourage you to pull up their website. That's freemarketcure.com. And go ahead and you can even pull up Stuart under the About section. Stuart Browning is a film director, an entrepreneur, and a healthcare policy commentator. And we welcome him this afternoon to Your Turn. Stuart, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you, Stuart, for joining us. You there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can. Sorry about that. A little bit of we're actually in the middle of a thunderstorm, which has kind of become routine for my Monday afternoon program. So I apologize if things cut out a little bit. We will definitely call you back. Stuart, tell us first a little bit, if you will, about freemarketcure.com.
Freemarketcure.com is a website that is a one-stop information source for people who are interested in the healthcare policy debate, who have heard a lot and may have seen Michael Moore's Sicko, and want to see a side of the debate that emphasizes personal freedom and personal responsibility and a free market cure for the problems, the existing problems of the U.S. healthcare system. And on this website, we have a lot of commentary and, you know, frequently asked questions, but most importantly, we have a series of short movies, short videos that show a different side of the healthcare policy debate than you might see in Michael Moore's Sicko.
And I see some of the titles: Uninsured in America, Two Women, Brain Surgery, and The Lemon.
Yes.
Now, are these different films? You're a film director. Have you produced these films?
Yes. These were all produced by me, directed by me. I appear in a couple of them. Most of them took place in Canada. They chronicle the cases of Canadians that are, you know, waiting long periods of time and sometimes too long for health care under their socialized system. And the film Uninsured in America is a short film that gets behind the real numbers about the so-called uninsured crisis here in the United States.
All right. Now, I have to confess, I may be in the minority here, but as I said at the beginning, it's sort of been my position that I don't go see Michael Moore films. So I feel a little bit at a disadvantage, and I'm going to have to call on my listeners to call in with more specific questions. Since I did not see the movie Sicko, and I don't plan on seeing it, at least not until it's available for free, because I don't want to have to pay for it and support Michael Moore's projects.
Right.
But I do understand that in addition to freemarketcure.com, there's a lot of debate out there about, you know, the film and sort of the liberties that he took. And even CNN has found numerous factual errors in Michael Moore's film. Can you point out for us some of the more heinous ones?
Yeah, you know, but parenthetically, let me state that what CNN did was they barely scratched the surface. In fact, they were so ineffective at it, it's sort of embarrassing. To start at the top, first off, Michael Moore says there are 50 million people uninsured. You know, most people say 45 million. He tacked on 5 million, but no one's called him on that. but out of that 45 million, you can find this out at my website. You can see my movie. You can see my sources. Out of that 45 million uninsured, 17 million of those are people who reside in households with over $50,000 a year in income.
So they choose to be uninsured, some of them. I mean, you could...
probably two-thirds, I would say. There are another big chunk, about one-third of the 45 million, about 14 million, are people who are eligible for Medicaid and SCHIP but haven't bothered to sign up. So these numbers are far, far from true. They're politically exaggerated. But if I could continue...
Please.
The disingenuous propaganda that's disseminated by that movie is truly harmful to the cause of liberty if a lot of people pick it up. And one of the things he says in the movie, And by the way, this is an argument that's been made by the single-payer left in this country for years, is that we spend more, but yet we are ranked 37th best healthcare system in the world. Now, of course, they imply, they don't say, well, how are we ranked and who ranked us, and they imply that this was handed down to Moses, I guess, you know, that it's just true. But what it comes from, this report, is a WHO. WHO is a World Health Organization. They're part of the United Nations. So the United Nations decided we're the 37th best healthcare system in the world. How did they do this? Well, they ranked the systems according to a score, and a significant percentage of the score measures the quote-unquote fairness of a country's financing for its healthcare system. And fairness is measured by the amount extra and more that higher income groups pay for their health care to compensate for the care of lower income groups. So in other words, how redistributionalist and socialized the healthcare system is. So the result of that is that we rank number 37, and you've got countries like Morocco ranking, you know, in the 20s.
Wow.
Now, how many people would go to Morocco for health care? Because when it comes down to really being sick, if you've got cancer, you'd want to be in the United States because we have the best cancer treatment anywhere in the world.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I grew up in Michigan, right at the border of Canada. I mean, you know, people used to cross the bridge or go through the tunnel all the time. And, you know, why were folks, I mean, we know why folks, the younger crowd was going over to Canada because the drinking age was 18 instead of 21. But why were the Canadians coming to the United States? They were coming for health care. I mean, now the Americans are going to Canada to get their prescriptions, but the Canadians and other folks are still coming to the United States, folks from socialized system, which is essentially what he believes, am I right, that we should go to, that our government should go to, is some form of socialized medicine?
He believes that, and a lot of people on the single-payer left, in fact, there is a bill before Congress that has been put up by some of the far-left members of the House, that private health insurance should be effectively outlawed, and that private health care should be outlawed. And what they mean by that is that it would be like a system in Canada where you can't spend your own money on your own body. You cannot have a private transaction with a doctor. It has to be paid for by the state, by the government. And then, of course, that presupposes that you're going to get the care that the government has decided that you will receive when they decide that you will receive it and how.
And, I mean, who gets to make those decisions? Who puts you in line where? I mean, right now, as your website accurately points out, it's the free market that determines it.
Yeah, well, listen, in the United States, we do have, you know, a portion of our system is run, is free.
Right.
We unfortunately, we have nearly half of our system is government paid for and government run. And the part that's free is so heavily regulated and so distorted out of shape by government regulations and the tax code that, you know, the insurance and the hospital industry is very uncompetitive. So, you know, it's, and even with that, we still compare better compared to countries like Canada. Canada has, out of a population of 31 million, 800,000 people at any one time waiting for treatment. Now, that would translate to over 7 million Americans waiting for health care. Not 7 million Americans without insurance and theoretically without health care, but 7 million Americans who have a problem. You know, they need surgery, and they've got to wait to get it.
It's a frightening thought. I mean, and I would expect that, I mean, how realistic is this bill, do you think, that has been introduced to Congress? I mean, do you think this is really just another one of those, like we saw, you know, with some of his other films, we're going to talk about it for a little while, and then, you know, hopefully he'll go away?
Well, that bill's not realistic, no. But there are bills in Congress right now that are realistic. There's the debate in the Senate on the dramatic expansion of the SCHIP program, the state's Children's Health Insurance Program, which was started under Clinton in 97, which is essentially a subsidy to the states to cover children in families where the income level was too high for Medicaid, but not they couldn't get insurance. Now, put aside the fact that one of the main reasons that insurance costs so much, or the primary reason that insurance costs so much, is government intervention into the health insurance and healthcare industry. Put that aside for a moment and consider this. The Congress, they want to expand this now to include 400% of the poverty level, which would include families in New York State, for instance, with over $80,000 a year in annual income. We're going to put them on welfare.
Let me talk to you a little bit about some of your films, and we've got some folks calling in with questions, and we'll get to those in just a second. Let me start with the one on brain surgery, a short course in brain surgery. Can you share with us a little bit of the tale of Lindsay McCreath that you outlined there in that video that's up on your website, freemarketcure.com?
Sure. This is a story with a happy ending, but you know, a lot of them don't have happy endings. You know, in a nutshell, a man has a seizure. He suspects, and his doctor suspects, that he has brain tumor. The wait was going to be over 4 months to get an MRI. He didn't want to wait 4 months. He went to a medical broker in Canada who essentially brings people across the border to the United States and arranges care. He came across, instead of waiting 4 months for an MRI, he came across and got it in just a couple of days. When he went back to Canada, the MRI showed that he had a golf ball-sized tumor
in
his brain. Of course, at this point, he didn't know whether it was cancerous or not. The only way to do that is to operate. But unfortunately, the wait to see a specialist in Canada was going to be 4 more months. Now, I'll point out, that's a wait to see a specialist. That's not a wait to get surgery. You have to wait 4 months to see a specialist, and then you can schedule surgery. Surgery could have been many months more, and then it could have been canceled.
Well, the guy could have been dead by then.
In many cases, that can happen. He didn't want to do that. So instead of waiting 4 months to see a specialist, he came to the United States within a week, had the surgery, they removed it, they did a biopsy, and lo and behold, it was cancer. So there's a perfect example of someone who saved their life by coming to the United States. So listen, you can find anecdotes on both sides. You can find anecdotes of people that have suffered here in the United States because they had to run around from their insurance company, but there's a key difference. Here in the United States, there's not a shortage of health care. You can get it. And in Canada, they actually have a shortage of devices, of operating rooms, of medical devices, of pharmaceuticals. They intentionally have shortages so that they can keep their spending down.
And the waiting list long.
Yes.
All right, Stuart, is it okay if we take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, we're talking with Stuart Browning. The website is freemarketcure.com. He's a film director, entrepreneur, and healthcare policy commenter. Go ahead, Jim. It's your turn.
Yeah, my little sister lives over in England, and her drugs are pretty high for what she gets, plus they're free. And then you take the people that's working in that's got health care, which is about $7,000 a year, I guess. But then you got the people that don't have any health care; they get waited on anyway. What's the difference? Plus, I know Bush is trying to cut down on the trade deficit, so he cut out the drugs from Canada, which were fractional. It's something like 10% on the dollar. My wife's paying $800 for drugs. Of course, she gets 20% back from the
insurance.
I mean, she only has to pay 20%.
Right.
But she could get the whole thing from Canada for a fraction of the cost, about $100 on the drugs she's taking. So I think I think Americans are paying for it, the ones that can pay for it. But I think we're paying for these people that don't have any insurance. So really, what's the big deal? I mean, what's the difference? I'm going to hang up and let y'all talk.
Okay, thanks so much, Jim.
Well, I think I understand the gist of the question. You know, yeah, there certainly are people here in the United States that are paying for their health care, but there are a lot of people that aren't. And that drives up the cost of health care. Now, I don't know, you know, your wife's situation, but I'll point out that, you know, if the Bush administration, if they were to allow drugs to be imported from Canada with no restrictions, there aren't enough drugs. Canada only has 31 million people. There aren't enough drugs there to satisfy the market here in the United States. The reason that drugs in Canada are as cheap as they are is because the drugs, which are produced here for the most part, the prices are held down in Canada because the government basically says to the pharmaceutical companies, you either sell them at a government-controlled low price, and they're the only buyers, by the way, and they can deprive you of any drug if they say it's not in their formulary. And so that's how they get the drugs cheaper. Now, what happens is that they have no pharmaceutical industry to speak of in Canada. The because they've reduced all the profit from pharmaceuticals. You can go there and you can get it, but it's really no different from going down the subway and buying a watch from a man hanging out down there.
Right, and I mean, I this isn't a show about prescription drugs and purchasing them, but I do think, you know, to address that as well, it's my understanding that, you know, some of what was behind, you know, our decision here or the president's decision here to ban, you know, those drugs from coming in, you know, in part it was because, as you mentioned, there are not enough drugs in Canada. And so what was happening is the drugs maybe came through Canada, but they didn't start in Canada. And people were getting drugs from overseas and they were getting not really what they thought they were getting, although it came through Canada. It wasn't really something that was even ever intended for a Canadian resident. And I also think that, you know, part of the whole problem as well lies in, you know, as you mentioned, Canada has no pharmaceutical industry. So you get down to the whole issue of R&D, research and development. And unfortunately, as one of the wealthiest nations in the world, we've got to pay some of that cost, fair or unfair. It's not fair. It's absolutely not fair, but I think that plays into it too. Stuart, I need to take a real quick break. Can you stay with us through the break? We'll have about 10 minutes when we come back.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with film director, entrepreneur, and healthcare policy commentator Stuart Browning. And we are talking about his website. It's called freemarketcure.com and the different exposés that they have done in response, I guess they're in response, you could say, to the movie Sicko by Michael Moore. And their motto at freemarketcure.com is, the choice is yours, don't let it become theirs. Again, it's freemarketcure.com. Can we go back, please, Stuart, to some of the other outrageous falsehoods that you have found in the movie by Michael Moore?
Sure. It was actually pretty easy for me to call these things. By the way, I didn't pay to go see it. I saw it at a free Washington premiere for the press, so I was able to do it without sending Mr. Moore any money.
Good.
But when I saw the movie, a lot of the things that are there are things that have been, you know, myths that have been spouted by the single payer left for years, so I fully expected it. He makes a big deal out of life expectancy. You know, listen, in the U.K., cancer patients there, 40% of British cancer patients never see an oncologist. Their cancer results are not near as good as theirs. If you take something like prostate cancer, in the United States, we have a mortality ratio of 19%. In other words, 19% of prostate cancer sufferers die from the disease. In the UK, it's 56%.
Wow.
So there's a big difference. But however, Michael Moore would say in his movie, well, listen, in the UK and in Canada, they have slightly longer life expectancy averages than we do here in the United States. And the implication, of course, is because, you know, their nation takes care of everyone by giving everyone health care regardless of whether they have money or not, and that results in longer life expectancy averages. But that's just not true, because life expectancy averages are only affected by the quality of a healthcare system to just the most minute degree. There are many other factors that determine life expectancy. And if we were to adopt a socialist healthcare system, we probably still would not live as long as the Canadians or the Brits. And some of the reasons for that is, you know, genetics, crime rates, poverty, diet, sanitation, literacy rates, obesity. A lot of things affect life expectancy averages. Japanese women live the longest of any people on Earth, no matter whether they live in Japan or whether they live in the United States under our health care system. One of the biggest factors is ethnicity. Quite frankly, you know, blacks don't live as long as Hispanic, as whites, and whites don't live as long as Asians. If you look at Canada, they have more Asians than they do blacks. So these things, you know, ethnic differences and population makeup can affect the life expectancy averages. So these are not good ways of evaluating the healthcare system. Now, as I alluded to a few moments ago, the best way to judge a healthcare system is how well it cures you when you're really sick. And the numbers don't lie on that. When it comes to things like cancer, we're better than Canada or the UK. So that's another one of his big whoppers that he tells.
Let me ask you this, Stuart. How would they propose to pay for a socialized system? I mean, would our taxes go through the roof? Is that where it would come from?
Well, they would go through the roof. When healthcare became just absolutely free, as it, you know, there would be no need to economize. No one would be in charge of the health care, and so there wouldn't be any mind towards using health care dollars effectively, since you'd be spending someone else's money. Now, the advocates of single payer health care and government run health care say that the administrative costs of having the government take everything over are less than that of insurance, of the private insurance industry. So with the money that we save, we could pay for it with just that. But that defies common sense. First off, insurance companies charge premiums, and then they have to make sure that people are not abusing and committing fraud, and they have to check claims. A Medicaid program in New York State, for example, well, they have the bottomless pit of taxpayer dollars, and that's why you see billions of dollars of fraud in the New York State Medicaid program.
Yeah, I mean, think Wisconsin has tried some form of socialized medicine, and it's pretty much, you know, been a bomb.
So did Tennessee with TennCare.
There
so
you go.
It has not worked wherever it will. It would cause our taxes to go a lot higher, and it would cause us to adopt something that is thoroughly un-American, and that is this. The medical ethic. The medical ethic is where a doctor and a patient decide together what course of treatment is best for the patient. A veterinarian ethic is when the doctor decides with the owner or the payer the course of treatment. And the course of treatment is tailored towards the convenience of the owner.
Right. And that all changes under...
A veterinary ethic of medicine is what we would be heading for.
All right.
When the government decides to be the payer of all medical care.
Right. Stuart, that's all the time we have. Thank you again for joining us. Watch the videos. They're freemarketcure.com. Spread the word about Stuart Browning's great work. Thanks so much for joining us.